Mr. Whitaker, Morgan, Vice Chair Cowdery, Co-Chair Hudson, Representative Kastner, and myself, Co-Chair Mastic. And I'd like to welcome everybody here to the committee today. And what we will be taking up first will be House Bill 349, and then H.J.R. 53 and H.J.R. 56 in that order. And I would like to call upon Eddie Graster to come forward to give testimony on House Bill 349. Please say your name and affiliation for the record and start your testimony, sponsor statement.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the House Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Eddie Graster, staff to Representative Beverly Masick. Representative Masick introduced House Bill 349 in response to the continuing problems with wildlife management and legitimate human uses of wildlife resources. In discussing House Bill 349, we'd like to share some of our observations that led to this legislation. American culture over the past century has changed from one that was predominantly rural, and this is rural in the sense of the American scheme of things rather than an urban-rural thing here in Alaska, but from essentially a rural culture to an urban culture. And the urban culture, by either default or necessity or lack of interest or apathy, has moved away from the ties to the natural resources that more rural people have. And due to that, we've had several groups arise in the last half of the century that are either less than understanding of rural values or outright against them. And they have pursued agendas that have tried to either close down trapping, hunting, and in some instances fishing, or they've tried to use strategies that limit human consumptive uses through the curtailment of management strategies such as predator-prey relationship management. For the most part, animal rights groups or environmental extremist groups really don't care about conservation of wildlife. If you look at the history of their finances, the predominant share of their financial resources goes into activities to do things like limit or curtail hunting, fishing, and trapping or other resource uses. In direct contrast to that, hunters and trappers and fishermen not only pushed for legislation on the national scene and got it, Pittman-Robertson funding and Dingell-Johnson-Wallet-Bro funding to promote responsible conservation of wildlife and the continued uses of wildlife. They've also contributed billions of dollars over the last half a century out of their own pockets through groups like Ducks Unlimited, Rough Grouse Society, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, and other groups. The changing dynamic of rural versus urban culture in America has also begun to affect the philosophy of some of the members of the Department of Fish and Game or Fish and Game agencies throughout the nation. And we now have biologists that support anti-hunting movements. And although the department now to admit to it, for instance, personally, I sat on the Board of Game for several years and had several biologists call me up promoting anti-hunting agendas in certain areas of the state. I think a good example of this is the recent move by the Board of Game and the department to close down bear hunting on Paint River without any biological reason for doing so. Speaking directly to the legislation, HB 349 has several sections dealing with issues of importance to the hunting and trapping public. The first section of the bill attempts to direct the department and board to adhere to management philosophies that clearly support wildlife programs that include actual efforts by ADF&G to maintain and enhance game populations for human consumption. The current language in AS 1605-221B and AS 1605-255 directs the department to develop wildlife resources. A few years ago, the legislature strengthened this section by including amendments to 05255, setting forth rules for active management or intensive management to take place. Regardless of board action and other pleas by rural Alaskans and other Alaskans in specific areas of the state, like the McGrath area or Unit 13, so far, the department has not been able to act upon recommendations or requests by the board. So the enhancement section, change from development to enhancement, is intended to add more strength to the intensive management rules that we put in place when Senator Sharp was here. The Section 3 of the bill requires the Board of Game to follow certain rules whenever contemplating further restrictions on access. In recent years, the Department and the Board have proposed increasing restrictions on access where little evidence has demonstrated need in relation to biological concerns. The Department will tell you that they are opposed to this section as they need the flexibility to restrict access to better manage user groups. They may also argue that biological concerns will arise if the bill were to pass. Speaking to the first argument, it should be noted that there are millions of acres in Alaska that are already off-limits to motorized access. We would argue there is little need outside of biological reasons to limit access further. As to the second concern, the language in Section 3 clearly allows for board action where they find it necessary for sustained yield management, necessary for enhancement or protection of habitat, or is necessary to protect the values within legislatively approved areas like wildlife refuges. So we try to allow the board the leeway to make restrictions on access where there was a biological reason for doing so. Section 4 of the bill defines means and methods. And we decided, Representative Mask decided that this was something that we need to look at in legislation due to actions by the board in several occasions. One comes to mind where the statutes clearly define what meat is salvageable on animals in the field that a hunter or a trapper takes. And regardless of that, the board further defined that statute with a regulation that said that people had to pack out the bones. That may be okay for somebody that's physically capable to do so, but there's a lot of women entering the hunting field now, and they may not be able to pack out the bones as readily as, say, a big man could. So the intent here is to look at coming up with some reasonable statutory parameters for the board to follow rather than leaving a loophole for them to drive a truck through. Section 5 amends the language creating refuges so it is clear that fishing, hunting, and trapping are legitimate uses of these areas. Refuges were originally suggested and supported by hunters for a variety of reasons. However, the agenda of the environmentalist community has recently included actions to eliminate hunting in these areas. Also, recently we should note that Congress passed similar legislation protecting fishing, hunting, and trapping on national refuges. It seems that the state of Alaska could do the same. Section 7, 8, and 9 relate to hunter education and wildlife conservation education. It would create a new standard for the department in working with nonprofit groups interested in providing educational opportunities. The department will probably have a problem with the mandatory language in Section 7, and that is something we should be able to work out. It should be pointed out that Sections 8 and 9 are permissive and don't require any grants to be made, nor does it allow any grants unless approved by the legislature. It does, however, restrict any grants to groups organized to support and protect hunting, fishing, and trapping. This section is in direct response to materials put out by the department on which $100 were spent that cast hunting and trapping in a bad light. Those educational materials have since been amended and reissued. However, they are still weak on supporting human consumptive uses as legitimate. This is of great concern as many teachers in public education are less than supportive of hunting, trapping, and firearms. It is also concerns us that the department will not lend its very credible support to hunting and trapping to the hunting and trapping public when ballot initiatives dealing with wildlife uses arise. And I think you can remember the snaring initiative and more importantly, the same-day airborne initiative where the environmental community put downright false ads on the news or on the TV screens. And people in the hunting community asked for department help to legitimize their point of view on that, and none was forthcoming. And there has been surveys done by the department and other people that show that the general public, which 80% is non-hunting, they're not either for hunting or against hunting, finds the department to be a credible source of information. So any help the department could give to legitimize hunting uses in cases like the same-day airborne initiative would be greatly appreciated. Sections 10 through 19 deal with public use areas, and again, the new language in these areas is intended to protect human consumptive uses as legitimate in those areas. As Representative Masick indicated in her sponsor statement, this legislation is intended as a vehicle to protect the rights of Alaskans who still desire to live off the land and continue their heritage of hunting, trapping, and fishing. It is unfortunate that legislation such as this must be considered, but the realities of modern American culture dictate that some extra action needs to be taken now. Environmental extremists, animal rights groups, and others view wildlife differently from those who hunt, trap, and fish. That is their right also. However, the founding fathers of both the nation and the state believed that personal values were not to be imposed on other segments of society. That is what the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights is about. It should be clear by this time that anti-hunting groups, by their very nature, cannot work constructively with consumptive users. They have one goal, to deny fishers, hunters, and trappers their legitimate use of the resource. Consumptive users, on the other hand, have been happy to share both the resource and their efforts to preserve that resource for everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Representative Colleton?
You stated the department has given out all statements that were possibly untrue or incomplete. Is that what happened, sir?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowdery, are you referring to the section about the same day? No, I stated that anti-hunting groups put false information on TVs.
Do you follow up, please?
Representative Cowdery.
Has the department always given straight answers?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowdery, I guess that'd be a difficult question to answer. I personally believe that my relationship with the department, I've gotten good answers from most members of the the people in the biology community, the biologists that work for the department for the most part. But I've found that the non-biologists in certain segments, especially the leadership of the department, have not always been forthcoming with good information.
Are there any other questions?
Now, the statement you made that he was referencing the ballot initiative
with regards
to the aerial hunting and the non-traditional. Right. And so are we getting – I'm just wondering if the question got mixed up when somehow – because the department didn't have anything to do with the initiative.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct. What I stated was that the department was requested to weigh in on the site of legitimate hunting, trapping, fishing community and on that issue in regards to the value of say, land and shoot trapping to maintain some semblance of predator-prey relationships that gave some protection to ungulate populations. They refused to do so. Their contention was that it was a public matter that the voters needed to decide, and they shouldn't be involved.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, can you just stay there in case, or stay here in case there are any questions that come up? Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm going to open this up for teleconference. We do have an Anchorage, Mr. Rick Thompson. Are you online, Mr. Thompson?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am.
Can you please state your name and affiliation for the record and give your testimony on House Bill 349?
Yes, I will. My name is Rick Thompson. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources. I'm a land manager in the Division of Mining, Land, and Water in the South Central Region here in Anchorage. My testimony is primarily in reference to Sections 10 through 19. The public use areas. Currently, the public use areas are under complete management of DNR and is not shared management with Fish and Game. We have some concern that the changes to the purposes of these public use areas with this language develops a little bit more of a flavor of a refuge as opposed to a public use area, and since it's not a refuge and it's not a shared management situation, that may present some problems for on-the-ground management concerns. And I also wanted to mention that DNR does not manage motorized access on general public domain state land for fish and game purposes. We pretty much limit our scope and purpose to public access and effect on resources. As the land manager for the Nelchina area, I'm not particularly aware of any situation where DNR has even considered or certainly implemented any kind of restrictions on motorized access there. So I'm not quite sure what that problem is there. And I want to mention specifically one other area, which is the Hatcher Pass public use area. As you know, we've contemplated for many years some major development, resort development there, which a part of which is in the public use area. And although it hasn't come to pass yet, we do have leases out on that, and I'm not quite sure what this language change would have to do with that in particular. So in general, we're just concerned over the changing of the flavor of the purpose of the public use areas and what the management intent is there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Representative Barnes?
Thank you. Madam Chair, perhaps the gentleman could help refresh my memory, but it seems to me that a year or so ago there was considerable public debate as it related to the use of off-road vehicles in the Nelchina area, and I'm not sure what other area up in that same area, but I do recall that there was considerable controversy over what was proposed at the time, and it was, if I remember correctly, it was closing that area to motorized use.
Mr. Thompson.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, yes, in fact, that debate did take place a year or so ago, but and there are people who bring that up from time to time, but it hasn't happened to my knowledge.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up.
Representative
Barnes. I do believe that during your testimony, though, you said that DNR had not considered closing down any area to off-road use. I may be mistaken, but I believe that's what I heard you say.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, no, I did say that, and you're right. I stand corrected on that. That we would consider anything that comes up, of course, in the matter of public process, in the manner in which we're responsible for our land, so that's true.
Well, I'd just like to make sure, Madam Chair, if I may, that committee members have not been here as long as I have are not misled into believing something is true that is a falsehood.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. Mr. Grasser, can you please come forward and maybe respond to Mr. Thompson's concerns with sections 10 through 19?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, again, my name is Eddie Grasser, staff representative of Beverly Massey. When we looked at doing this legislation, the intent was to protect those traditional uses, hunting, fishing, trapping, on these lands. And Mr. Thompson may be correct, it may create some tension with DNR, but I believe that Fish and Game still retains management authority over the wildlife on these lands, which would be our answer in that situation.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Hearing none, then I'm going to go to the MATSU. We have Mr. Rod Arno testify on House Bill 349.
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Rod Arno. I live in Palmer, Alaska. My main testimony will be on HJR 56, but the testimony that I would like to give on House Bill 349 is that I do favor it, and particularly as we see the number of Alaskans that do purchase hunting license is approximately 15% of the population that, as Mr. Grasser pointed out, as a minority of Alaskans who do choose to hunt a wild food harvest, that it is unfortunate, but I do see the necessity of having some protection for the minority that we are. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Arno. Are there any questions for Mr. Arno? Hearing none, We'll move to Juneau, and we have Wayne Reglin here from the Department of Fish and Game. And could you come forward and give your name and affiliation for the record?
My name is Wayne Reglin. I'm the director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation. And thank you for the opportunity to comment on H.R. 349. I agree with many of the goals that Mr. Grasser stated for the reasons for this legislation, but I have great concerns about some of the specific language changes and what they might do to the management of wildlife in Alaska. Section one of the bill changes the reason for creating the Board of Game from conservation and development of Alaska's game resources to the conservation and enhancement of these resources. Sounds like a simple change to change something from development to enhancement, but this could have some real serious unintended consequences. The Supreme Court has defined development of our natural resources as to make them available for human use. Enhancement, however, relates to improving or increasing the size or the health of a wildlife population without regard to human utilization. And traditionally, the Board of Game has adopted regulations providing for an allocation of wildlife resources for human use. This language change would change the emphasis in our management from the size of a population rather than its use. It could result in the curtailment of hunting opportunities in order to increase wildlife populations. The language we have now, I don't know what see a problem with. At the least, I would say that you would want to have both enhancement and development, but certainly we should keep the words development in this section. Section 2 does the same thing, and just in a different part of the statutes.
On that point,
Madam Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Reglin, how would this section apply, say, in a situation where there's predator control, like in the McGrath area? Would this change how you would manage, I would say, the moose resource, if the wording were to get changed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jewell, I don't believe so. If it did anything, it would make it more difficult to do wolf control because it would put the emphasis on the size of the population rather than on the use of the population. It's sort of an egg and chicken, but not sure why we need to change it.
Representative Co-Chair Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wayne, you said that you have some court decisions already that speaks to development as it relates to the use of the game, for example, or the fish stock, and that enhancement may conflict with those court decisions?
Madam Chair, Representative Hudson, I believe so. I have discussed this with the Department of Law at length. There's a very specific ruling or decision by the Supreme Court of Alaska on the word, what development means in relation to fish and wildlife resources. And that what it means is to make them available for human use. That was a case in fisheries. But it goes to both.
That was the question I wanted to answer.
I can move on to the other sections of the bill then. Section 3 would limit the board's authority to restrict the methods of access for purposes of taking fish or game. And it would limit the boards of game would only be able to limit access in a hunt or in an area, could only be limited if it was the legislature had done it, or if the board could do this if a majority of the local fish and game advisory committees and a majority of the advisory committees from the area, which represents the majority of the hunters using the area, agreed to this restriction. And then there's a couple others. And the board would no longer be able, unless all the local advisory committees and other advisory committees agreed, be able to use access restrictions to reduce conflicts among user groups. For example, we have a whole array of control use areas to reduce conflicts amongst different user groups. Along the Koyukuk River, for example, you can't use airplanes. There's all kinds of them. These are very popular for most hunters, and they do give the board a real effective tool to minimize conflicts amongst user groups. What this bill would do would create a cumbersome and I think probably an unworkable requirement that local fish and game advisories approve restrictions on traditional access. Most of these committees meet infrequently. Achieving a consensus among the different groups could be very difficult, could take years while problems continued. The department would have to determine the number of hunters using an area and also where these hunters lived, and then so we could figure out whether or not an advisory committee had veto authority over an action of the Board of Game. I guess I've always felt strongly that the advisory committee is an excellent system, and it should be advisory. It should not have veto authority over decisions made by the Board of Game.
Oh, Mr. Regman, just on that point alone, on your testimony in regards to this section here and the problem that we are facing today, I know the Board of Game has passed, they did pass a measure asking the administration to help out in the McGrath area, and apparently there is nothing happening with that. The governor is not going to listen to the Board of Game and their wishes to have the department to come in and help with that Wilson moose problem population that is happening in that area. So I have to bring that up because of your comments that you just made, but if you could please go ahead. And
yes, I'll move on. I think that I understand the issue at McGrath, but I don't think access to the area is an issue there. Section 4 of the bill would define methods and means in statute and restrict them to tools, implements, devices, or vehicles that are used to take fish and game. Now, methods and means are not currently defined in either statute or regulations, but there is an entire section of our codified regulations dealing with methods and means. That section addresses such issues as shooting off of a highway, defining bait, prohibiting use of a poison. All of our want and waste laws are in this section, our restrictions on same-day airborne hunting, that type of thing. The way this bill is structured, all of those methods and means or rules and law regulations that aren't specific to a tool or a vehicle or a device would go away or would have to be restructured somehow into another part of the regulation. I don't know if that was the intent of the, but that's the way, the effect of the bill as it's currently structured. If that was your intent, then we need to have some discussions about why, if it wasn't, we need to figure out how to restructure that part so that it doesn't have some of these rules go away that are essential for good wildlife management. Section 5 of the bill expands the purposes of state game refuges to include enhancement of fish and game habitat, and traditional public uses of fish and game. It makes the perpetuation and enhancement a public recreation as a primary purpose of a refuge or critical habitat area equal in value to the conservation, protection, and enhancement of fish and game. Now, the addition of the language of perpetuate and enhance general public recreation is going to make it very difficult and probably more expensive to manage our state, our 10 state wildlife refuges. What you're doing is putting traditional access and recreation on the same level as equal to protection of habitat. And I don't think that that could create some real problems for us. For instance, we need to seasonally restrict certain types of access like kayaks in Potter's Marsh so that they don't disturb the nesting waterfowl. And we want to make sure that we don't lose the opportunity to do that. I guess that I am very proud of our efforts and our ability to keep refuges open to all the traditional uses and to open to hunting. We've kept Potter's Marsh and Mendenhall Refuge open to hunting for years, and we fought the fight, and I see no reason at this point to change that. I think we have a good record there, and I think it would be more detrimental than helpful to make this change. Now, Section 7 of the bill would eliminate the authority of the department to develop our hunter safety program. It would change it, and it would only authorize us to assist private nonprofit corporations in developing a hunter safety education program. We would not be able to conduct a hunter education and safety education program on our own. We have an excellent hunter education program that provides a coordinated delivery system that's consistent all across the state. Currently, the department is implementing changes to this program that have resulted from working with a statewide steering group. And the changes that we're making are endorsed by most of the Hunter Ed Instructors of Alaska, the International Hunter Ed Association, and the National Shooting Sports Foundation. If this law were passed, I have great concerns about the consistency in the course and whether it could be delivered across the state. There is no current group in Alaska that I know of that we could contract with to provide money to develop such a course or deliver such a course. I think we would lose a direct link from the department to the hunters that could be detrimental.
Excuse me on that point, Representative Jewell.
Thank you. With regards to the hunter education safety, over what period of time, in terms of months or years, has it taken you to develop that, and what kind of resources have been put into it up to this point?
Mr. Chairman, we've had a hunter education program in Alaska since the mid-1960s. It is available, on paper at least, statewide, but in reality, it's much more available in the urban areas and the road systems. One of the things we've spent a lot of effort on in the last year is with remote delivery systems through the internet and rural net and videos, and so we'll be able to deliver our course throughout the state. Our budget up until 4 years ago, 5 years ago when I became director, was about $200,000 a year. Since the last 5 years, we've increased that. We're spending about $450,000 in the Hunter Education Program, partly because Senator Sharp, one of his last acts before he left, was give us a large CIP directed towards Hunter Ed at our request. I think we're making some great progress in our Hunter Ed program, and it's going to pay off for us. I look at this money and increased funding as a real investment in the future of hunting. I think that I don't disagree that there's lots of with what Mr. Grasser said, that hunting's under attack, and one of the ways to respond to that attack in a very effective way is through our hunter education program and make sure our hunters are responsible users of the wildlife resource. So I think I look at it as an investment. It would be a great setback for us to lose authority to do this program ourselves. I guess I'm not opposed to working with other groups, and we try to, We are very much involved with 4-H shooting sports in our program. In the past, we have been very closely aligned with the National Rifle Association's Hunter Safety Program. We're not as much so today, but we feel almost all of our hunters are members of NAA or NRA. And so we want to continue to work with these groups, and we will, but I think to mandate it and say we couldn't have a program with to turn money over to them would not be in the best interest of wildlife management in Alaska. I wanted to just comment on one quick thing. That's the end of my testimony, but there was a question about the department being involved in ballot initiatives. And what we've done in each of the ballot initiatives is make an effort to provide factual information to the public through radio and newspapers. What we have not done is used our funding to put ads on television or radio. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Redman. Co-Chair Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wayne, I want to get back just for a moment to Section 3, which is the regulation of the means for access for hunting, trapping, and fishing. And there's nothing in that the new provision here that would interrupt the current commercial fishing activities, is there? I mean, I'm reading non-commercial, meaning that that the commercial fishing activities where the commissioner and the board can, say, halt fishing and create periods and bag limits and things like that when dynamic information comes forward that is necessary to maintain that particular stock. Am I reading that correctly?
Madam Chair.
There is no, there's no impact here on that?
No impact at all.
Okay. There was something else. Well, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Redman. Okay. We have this Bishop here.
Madam Chair, I did have one more question. Can I ask one more before he gets away?
Co-Chair Hudson, you may.
I wasn't quick enough.
You know, all of this subsistence stuff, Wayne, is brand new to us, but it looks now like we're going to be dealing with federal subsistence boards and things of this nature. Do you see any interaction or any conflict in that access for hunting, trapping, and fishing with the new regimen that is coming down in federal regulations on subsistence? Or can you tell?
Representative Hudson, I don't see any direct tie right now. I guess I would have to read it again in light of trying to think about that. But I don't think there's a direct link. I think that in the state management system, we use, or our board again uses control use areas in a variety of ways. The federal agencies will probably never do that because they have the ability to, or I guess ability is the right word, but they have the mandate to provide opportunity for subsistence hunting only to subsistence users, and they can limit it just to people within a certain location based on where they live.
Would you do me a favor and look that over a little finer, please?
Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Eglin, earlier I asked a question as it related, in one particular section, I think the difference between enhancement and development as it related to the situation in McGrath with regards to the wolves. I'd like to ask that same question, not just to that section, but in the whole bill. We've heard a lot of about that situation, and I'm wondering, is this bill in its entirety, would that be helpful or hinder the situation that's just out in that area?
Representative Jewell, I think what the change would do is take the emphasis away from uses of the wildlife resource and place it on the size of the wildlife resource. I don't think that to take that unilateral action
would be wise. I think it could harm our efforts to provide opportunities for human uses of wildlife resources. I think enhancement and development are very different things. I think they're both legitimate, and if this moves ahead, I would say that you would should might want to consider using both words.
Thank you for your comment, Mr. Rakeman. And that concludes his testimony, and we have Dick Bishop here, and Chuno, step forward and give your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dick Bishop. I'm Vice President of the Alaska Outdoor Council, for whom I'm testifying. And my testimony on HB 349 will be pretty brief. We are very interested in some of the concepts expressed in HB 349, such as protection of traditional access for fishing, hunting, and trapping, improving habitat maintenance in public use areas, expanding support for hunter education and game conservation education. However, we believe that the wording of portions of the bill does need additional work, and we'd like to offer to work with the committee in perfecting the language in the bill, because I think there are some very important concepts here and some legitimate concerns that should be addressed, and we'd just at this time say we'd like to contribute to addressing those. I think there is room for improvement. It appears that there are some potential problems. One, in the context of the HJR 53, the change from development to enhancement there, we had not fully explored. So we would like to explore that more based on what Director Reglin has indicated. We would not like to see a diminishment in the appropriateness of human uses. So I think there's some things there we need to work with. And one more comment on 349, I guess, is that in the Fairbanks area in particular, the one entity that currently has provided most of the momentum in seeking public shooting facilities has been a municipality, so the borough in this case. So we would certainly not like to see that momentum impeded by some change in the law. It's been tough enough to get them going. We want to keep them going, not potentially slow them down. So things like that, I think, just need to be addressed. So we'd really be happy to work with the committee and your staff to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's encouraging to know, because that's part of the process. And you have a really good bill to make it a little better.
Thank you much.
I'm glad to give you that opportunity. Are there any questions for Mr. Bishop? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. And we have here in Juneau, Carl Rosier. You want to testify? Come forward, please. 349.
Madam Chair, I didn't wish to testify on 349. Did I get signed up on 349?
Yes.
I was here on HJR 53 and 56.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's no problem. Thank you for the correction. Teleconference, we have one new person that would like to testify from Homer. Mrs. Nancy Hillstrand, if you can please give your name and affiliation for the record and go ahead and start your testimony.
Yes, hello, my name is Nancy Hillstrand. I'm speaking for myself, and wildlife management is very complex, and it's much more complex than what a bill can do. And I do concur with what the ADF&G and ADNR has stated on their comments. I believe we have a good democratic process presently, which allows us to battle out these controversies with the systems put in place. I think it's ill-advised to have any knee-jerk reactions at this time, and it's not healthy to set up special privileges or exclusive rights, which the Constitution abhors. Our societies are gaining recognition of what multiple use means, and we need to reduce conflict, not create conflict, which I believe this bill has the potential of doing. And at the same time, we need to allow the board, the game board, the fish board, to work without a stranglehold on this democratic process. Thank you very kindly. I'm against this bill, 349.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 349. If you'd like to step forward and please give your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony, please. We do have two other items on the calendar today, so you can please begin.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Susan Schrader, and I'm testifying for Alaska Conservation Voters. I hope I haven't confused you all. I circulated a position paper earlier this morning and then revised my position paper, and hopefully you have the new one that is entitled Revised Position Statement. I would like to testify on the other two measures today also, and I will try to keep this brief. This one might be a little lengthier. As I think I have expressed before, Alaska Conservation Voters is a nonprofit organization. We currently represent over 40 other nonprofit organizations, as well as some business members here in Alaska. And altogether, we're currently representing close to 22,000 registered Alaskan voters. Our members can be found in all user groups of Alaska's wildlife. Members include subsistence users, recreational hunters, wildlife viewers, and photographers. We respect and appreciate the long, rich tradition held by Alaskans, native and non-native alike, that surround our state's wildlife resources. We also acknowledge that the opportunities to view and to use the wildlife resources extends to all Americans and indeed to the visitors to our state from other countries. We support wildlife management actions that are based on unbiased scientific studies and that reflect the values of most Alaskans. And we've been greatly concerned over the last few years about the continued positions taken by the legislature that fail to recognize that the legislators have responsibilities under the Constitution and the public trust doctrine to care for the wildlife for the benefit of all Alaskans. As far as the different sections of the bill, I think you'll see that some of our concerns have been expressed by others here, mainly the representatives from the agencies. Speaking to the substitution of the word enhancement for development, we have great concerns that enhancement clearly mandates principles that are very single-mindedly aimed at increasing a population, whereas development embodies a full range of policies that address the long-term benefits of wildlife resources for all user groups, emphasizing the use of the wildlife. We have always maintained that the Board of Game and the Department should not have any further restrictions placed on them as far as their ability to regulate access, particularly motorized access, to areas under their at certain times of years or in certain conditions to the refuges. Section 5 is particularly disconcerting to us because it expands the management mandate of fish and game over all the refuges in the state. Many of these refuges are highly prized by Alaskans and by visitors to our state, Creamer's Field, the Anchorage Coastal Refuge, the Mendenhall Wetlands. To statutorily mandate that activities such as hunting, trapping, and motorized use, recreation, in fact, should be permitted in all the refuges clearly fails to recognize that there are areas that must be managed to avoid conflicting uses, that there are areas that must be managed to protect habitat, and simply areas that are best managed to protect non-consumptive and quiet uses. In Section 9, our concern here is with requiring that Fish and Game restrict their grants to organizations that promote and indeed advocate hunting and trapping. There's obviously been concern expressed about radical environmental groups and animal rights groups. If there's a concern here with the legislature that advocacy-based environmental groups, such as Alaska Conservation Voters, might be recipients of grant money, then we would suggest consider authorizing grants only to organizations that do education work and not advocacy work. I think this makes a far more balanced and fair approach to simply exclude those groups advocating non-consumptive use and allowing consumptive use groups to receive grants, groups that clearly advocate on hunting and fishing. Certainly doesn't bring any balance to the issue. I think all the members of Alaska Conservation Voters, all 22,000 of us, clearly recognize how volatile and divisive this issue has been, that of wildlife management. I think we're joining a lot of other Alaskans who are calling for a bit more balanced, a fairer, and a far-sighted, more of a long-term approach to management decisions that are based on the best comprehensive, unbiased scientific data available. Unfortunately, because so many provisions in this bill run counter to that approach, we cannot support it in its current form. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
That concludes the testimony for House Bill 349. And what I am going to do is have this bill worked on a little bit more with the department and with AOC and other parties that are interested on some of the sections that came up during this hearing, and I plan to take this up as soon as possible when we get our amendments together. So with that, we will move on to H.J.R. 53. And as the prime sponsor of this bill, I would like to call Eddie Craster up to give a statement on H.J.R. 53.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Look at him again.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Resources Committee. Again, for the record, my name is Eddie Grasser, staff to Representative Beverly Massey. H.R. 53 is a kind of a companion bill to HB 349 and maybe some respects even to Representative Carl Morgan's bill, H.J.R. 56. We've been doing some research, and we have found that several states have introduced legislation or have amended their constitution protecting hunting and fishing and trapping as a constitutional right. And that's the intent of H.J.R. 53, to make hunting, fishing, and trapping a preferred use of wildlife. Again, some of the arguments that we made on House Bill 349 apply here. There's an increasing and growing attack on legitimate uses by consumptive users of wildlife resources. Most of the groups that are fostering those attacks have one goal in mind, and that is to completely eliminate those uses. I think that even here in Alaska, in recent letters to the editor over the McGrath-Wolf situation, you'll find letters to the editor from radical environmentalists and animal rights groups, members that openly state that in their letters to the editor. And they don't care whether the use is recreational hunting or hunting for personal use, for lack of a better term, or for subsistence hunting. So I guess Representative Massey, in discussing this, felt that if states like Alabama could pass a constitutional amendment that says that the citizens of the state of Alabama have a right to hunt in their constitution, that Alaska should probably be able to do the same thing. So it's clear that hunting, which only makes up a minority of the citizens of the state, is a protected right or a protected minority, free from persecution by those people that would like to place their values on the rest of us. And this amendment also probably needs to be thought about a bit, because we chose working with legislative legal to use the word consumptive uses, but I spoke with Kevin Saxey, who is the AG assigned to the Board of Game and does natural resources, and he suggested that we do the same as Alabama and just say right to hunt, fish, and trap, because consumptive uses may not be clear enough or have some other connotations. Anyway, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you once again for your testimony. And we will move to Wayne Regman. Testify on HJR 53.
For the record, my name is Wayne Regman, Director of Division of Wildlife Conservation. I have the same concerns that I expressed on the previous bill about using the words enhanced rather than developed. And I already explained why, so that was my only comment.
Any questions? Hearing none, thank you, Wayne. And we have Dick Bishop. Step forward again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess you're not getting a lot of variety here in your audience, but sort of revolving witnesses or something like that. But Madam Chair, my name is Dick Bishop with the Alaska Outdoor Council, on whose behalf I'm testifying, and do appreciate the chance to testify. And the Alaska Outdoor Council does strongly support the concepts expressed in HDR 53. Section 2 really makes clear what was the original intent of Alaska's Constitution in Section 4 of that Constitution, which says that wildlife, as well as other replenishable resources, and I quote, shall be utilized, developed, and maintained on the sustained yield principle. The sustained yield principle refers to consumptive use, and a review of constitutional language and constitutional convention language makes that clear. Unfortunately, in the general language of the Constitution itself, it may be susceptible to different interpretations. We would recommend in HJR 53 amending line 11 to read the taking of fish and wildlife rather than just wildlife, and we would also recommend in line 12 changing the A to the D so that D would be the taking of fish and wildlife for human consumptive use would be the preferred use.
Could you say that again? Which line?
Yes, in line, yes, Madam Chair and Representative Barnes, line 11, we would recommend amending it so that it would read to the taking of fish and wildlife, and in line 12, we would recommend that it read human consumption is the preferred use of wildlife. And we think that's entirely consistent with the construction of the Constitution and the thought that went into it originally, and it certainly is consistent with other provisions of it. In particular, the sustained yield language. And Gordon Harrison explained the sustained yield principle about as clearly and simply as anyone has, in my experience, in his book, Alaska's Constitution, A Citizen's Guide. He said, the principle of sustained yield management is a basic tenet of conservation. It is the simple yet fundamental idea that the annual harvest, and I emphasize that, the annual harvest of a biological resource should not exceed the annual regeneration of that resource. Maximum sustained yield is the largest harvest that can be maintained year after year. Harrison's book on the Constitution is really a good guide to interpreting it, and of course, to some extent, it is his opinion, but he was pretty careful to try to follow and research the thoughts that went into the development of the Constitution by the Constitutional Convention. But the point I want to emphasize here is that fundamental to the sustained yield principle is the idea of annual harvest, and that annual harvest of a biological resource is by people. So very, very fundamentally in our Constitution is the idea of harvest of renewable resources by people. And again, the Constitution and minutes of the convention really emphasize sustained yield management for beneficial uses, and again, by people. Yet today, as has been mentioned, that central element is often overlooked or even disputed as more people's lives, as you've heard, become more urban-oriented. And we believe it's essential to the continuation of traditional Alaskan lifestyles that our connection to the lands and waters through the harvest of fish and wildlife be recognized. With regard to the term enhanced as an alternative to developed, I would make the same comment I had previously, that we think that should be reviewed. In one sense, it seems to be maybe have a different and perhaps a clearer image, but it sounds as though there may be some difficulties with it in terms of interpretation of state law. And we actually don't have any big problem with the term development. We've learned to understand it, I guess. Again, the Outdoor Council supports HDR 53 with an amendment to include both fish and wildlife and emphasizing the preferred use for human consumption. And we do recommend its approval by the legislature. We think that passage of HDR 53 will reassure Alaskans that a vital part of our heritage is properly recognized and accommodated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go to teleconference in Fairbanks. We have Mr. Bill Hager.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
You're squeaking a little there. I think your volume is a little too high.
I'm sure.
Representative Barnes.
I'd just like to point out the bill does squeak a lot.
Ramona, bless your heart. Well, I see a lot of my friends there. Thank you for your time. I will speak for the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association today. We're trying to get this a little less noisy here. We're very much in favor of HDR 53. I think the sponsor in her statement probably took most of my thunder away. She's done a great deal of research on it, as I have, and have found that it's extremely constitutionally sound. I have a very, very good comfort level with the legislation, and would encourage you to pass this through and see if we can get it on the ballot this fall. That's all I need to take your time. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kastner.
Who's Mr. Hager affiliated with again?
Mr. Hager, can you give your affiliation again?
Yes. Can you hear me all right, Bev? The Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bill.
You bet. Thank you.
And is there any other questions for Mr. Hager? Okay, well, we're going to go back to Homer for Mrs. Nancy Hillstrand.
Yeah, hello, this is Nancy Hillstrand. And I really don't think what we're seeing is primarily an anti-hunting agenda. I'd call it recognition that we are in the 21st century with a society which understands that the preferred use of wildlife includes other preferential uses. Present management, coupled with the high human population, is not fine-grained enough to perceive the complexities of species interactions, reproductive strategies, and life stage history. For instance, the tiny jackscrew is the deciding factor of Alaska's huge jetliner going down. As in wildlife, our management, these tiny obscure relationships are unseen by our present management. The precautionary principle must enter into this or we have crisis management. I sent you a copy of a summary from the 1996 National Survey of Fishing, Hunting, and Wildlife Associated Recreation for Alaska. And if you are concerned with budgets, you might want to look at this table and just realize that there is actually a very large constituency which has a different viewpoint on what a preferential use is. The total expenditures on wildlife viewing was actually $780 million. That's getting up close to $1 billion, whereas hunting-wise, the total expenditure was $198 million. It's important to look at this and see what you think and maybe set up your own survey so we can truly find out what is the preferential use. Right now, we have no mechanism set up to allow anyone except the people that can enter into the Dangle-Johnson or Pittman-Robertson Act to put money into the funds of fish and wildlife conservation. And I think that maybe it would help if we did that also, because then we'd have a more rounded, better democratic process in our society to pay the fair share so we could all put our money where our mouth is. I really appreciate your work on this, but I really feel that it's not what we need right now, because I don't think it is true that indeed human consumption is the preferred use. Thank you very much.
We do have some questions from committee members here. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Her testimony was most interesting. Ma'am, would you not agree that the wildlife resources are managed by our Department of Fish and Game through laws and the handed down to the legislature and our Constitution on the sustained yield principle, and is managed through the departments on the seasons, bag limits, and conservation of the resources?
Yes, I do.
And I must say that although I have read it places, I have never heard anyone testify before that the feeding of one's family is less preferential than viewing wildlife. And while saying that, most everybody knows I have a daughter that is a wildlife photographer, and she would probably agree with you.
Well, the thing is that some people feed their families by creating a business that maybe is allowing them to feed their families through wildlife viewing. And that's why I brought up the point about expenditures, and I think it's real important you look at that, because, yes, you know, my husband hunts, all five sons hunt. I mean, our family definitely is our users of the resources, and we're also all fishermen. But the point is that they make their money. We all make our money in different ways, and we need to make sure that, you know, in sometimes you make money by having the wildlife actually sitting there in front of you. And I know it's, you know, obnoxious to some people to think that, but you make money from actually having people view these animals. It's like the Serengeti in Africa. And you just get to that point where there's so many humans on Earth right now and in Alaska that we can make it a preferential use, but, you know, we have to be very, very careful. And again, like I said in my last testimony, to manage for the, to err on the side of conservation, or all of a sudden we're going to find we're in real trouble. So that's where I'm coming from on that.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up, and this really does not need a response, because I believe that this resolution is self-explanatory, that you're now not talking about people selling the fish and wildlife, but instead that they are securing this fish and wildlife for human consumption. And human consumption, I think, is entirely different than one using it for a business purpose, because we're speaking to someone going out and harvesting the animal to put food on their table, or the fish to put food on their table. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barnes. Okay, here in Juneau, we're going to move to Carl Rosier, and you will be testifying on this one.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Good afternoon to the co-chairs and the members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Carl Rosier, and I'm here today testifying on behalf of the Territorial Sportsmen. TSI is an outdoor recreation group with a membership of slightly under 2,000 individuals, most of whom live here in the Juneau and Douglas area. Our organization was formed in 1945 and has been continuously involved in fish and game and other outdoor issues since that time. TSI does not take lightly the importance of making changes to our state constitution, but we recognize that on occasion that it is necessary. In view of recent actions by the current governor's office, apparently due to political ties with extremist animal rights groups, ecotourism interests, and federal park interests, I'm here today to place TSI on record supporting House Joint Resolutions 53 and 56. A February 24th letter to the Board of Game outlining the governor's plan for how game populations are to be managed in this state should be of concern to every citizen. The policy direction issued by the governor completely ignores the significance of the funding sources that ADF&G's game management program is based on. And under the governor's direction, wildlife viewing is to be considered on the same priority plane as the lifestyle and recreational hunting, so important to most Alaskans. In the governor's edict to the board, he assigned the highest priority to subsistence, and that's probably correct, and then takes the tools and the decision process away from the Board of Game and places it with an unknown adaptive management work group appointed by the commissioner. What a total subversion of the public process Alaskans have participated in since statehood. TSI believes that it must be the legislature that decides the sideboards of policy supporting the constitutional mandate of sustained yield. Lacking your involvement and oversight, the public and the resources are destined to lose. The governor's letter and recent actions on Board of Game appointments sends a chilling message to all users of our great fish and game resources in this state, a resource that had been well managed until the current governor recently took over the reins of decision making. For these reasons, the organization I represent strongly support passage of both HJR 53 and 56. HJR 56 appears quite good in its present form. In HJR 53, the governor's direction to the Board of Game gives us great concern over wording in section 2, subparagraph small b. We recommend that the A following consumption is be changed to the preferred use of wildlife. The term enhanced as a replacement for develop gives rise to some concern, as it seems there is a connotation of use associated with develop that is not there with enhanced. I have no problem with the term enhanced, but generally I think that's what we are striving for, but we also want to be sure that the provisions for use are included in that definition. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Barnes. Commissioner Roser, when you were the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game, I would like to know, in your own words, how you looked upon the legislature, if you looked upon us as the policy-making body of the state, or you looked upon the board as the policy-making body of the state, or the administration.
Madam Chair, in my view, it takes all three working together on this, but I think that the legislature itself is where the basic policy for the utilization of those resources out there actually emanates from. The administration, in fact, puts forth the implementation and takes care of implementation, and when there's problems, they come back to the legislature to talk about these things. But it took all three, the legislature, the administration, and certainly the agency heads to, in fact, carry out the sustained yield mandate of the state.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow up. His answer is very interesting, because while I recognize that it certainly takes all three to assure the sustained yield, I want to make a statement, and if I'd like to know whether or not that you, in fact, agree or disagree. The Constitution, in my view, establishes the legislature as the policymaking body of the state. The administration, and through his commissioner and board members that he appoints, we confirm, and the staff of the department are there to carry out the laws and the policies made by this legislature. And I would like to hear his comment.
Madam Chair, I think we're saying the same thing. I would agree.
Madam Chair, I don't think we're saying the same thing, because it's one of the things that I have consistently run into here is that, and I think it's real important that somewhere along the line we make absolutely certain that the record is clear, that the legislature establishes the policy and that the administration and the professionals are to carry out the policy. And that's not, in my opinion, what's been going on here of late and relates to the testimony that he gave. Yet his answer to my question was, I think, an answer he would have given had he been a commissioner. Still.
Well, I really think that I said it all in my testimony here. On this. I find it very difficult to understand the direction that we seem to be going, and certainly the board of fish and the board of game are a public process that I think has to be protected. And certainly when you begin to play the politics that I see recently here taking place with the Board of Game in terms of their reappointments, in terms of giving the absolute direction of how we're in fact going to go, which to my way of thinking is in total violation of the policy direction here on this thing, I just have to speak up. And if we're going to be faced with that kind of political meddling in the process on this thing, then I think it's darn well time that we began to, in fact, build some of these rights in that protect the fishing and the hunting and the enjoyment of those resources. There's nothing wrong with, in my view, there's nothing wrong with viewing wildlife. But there, on the other hand, there's nothing wrong with, in fact, having these activities going on. They can be carried out in the same areas that hunting is taking place. They can be carried out at different times of the year. And everybody is happy, but if you look at the history of viewing areas and this type of thing in the state, the closure of those areas is not far behind the designation of those areas.
Madam Chair, if I could just digress one moment, please.
Representative Burns, you have the floor.
Mr. Rosier, when John Bennett was still alive and in this legislature, I think you will recall, he passed a bill, and I can't remember exactly what it was, that forbade, and I think it was in the Neltina area, the closure of those areas to motorized vehicles. And could you help me whether or not it was that particular area? And to your knowledge, was that law ever repealed? Because it was a law.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I can help on that one. I think at the time that Don Bennett was in the legislature here, I was a comm fish person operating here in southeastern Alaska, and I'm afraid I can't help her on that.
I feel sorry for him that he was in competition and missed all that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Co-Chair Hudson and then Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Carl, if this provision were in the Constitution today, is it your opinion that the governor would be forced to conduct aggressive wolf control measures in the McGrath area and other areas where we have this extreme pressure on the moose and, I presume, caribou in some areas?
Madam Chair, I think that the governor would have to take a very hard look at making that decision. And it seems to me that, you know, that we've gone through a process here now on wolf control in this state. The governor has his board that's in place at the present time. He's had a study that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars on predator-prey relationships by the Academy of Sciences on this. We've had a lengthy public process that led the board to a decision that was, in fact, supported, I believe, by at least professional people within the department. But you saw the headlines the other day in the newspaper. Governor says no. So there's got to be something there that changes that attitude on this. And if the Constitution is modified to in fact accommodate that, then I think the governor is in fact forced to move in that direction. Yes.
Representative Jewell.
Madam Chair, I think he may have gotten the answer to my question.
Yes, Madam Chair, the note that was put before me, and I didn't notice who it was, said that Don's bill forbade state parks from closing areas to hunting.
Yeah. I have a good memory.
Yes, you do. I was impressed with that earlier discussion.
Thank you. Is there any other questions here? Or hearing none, thank you, Mr. Rosier.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we have one more person to testify here in Juneau. Sue yeah. Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we're all getting recycled here, I like that idea. My name is Susan Schrader. I am a conservation advocate for Alaska Conservation Voters. Very briefly, our concerns with the proposal before you, one of the main concerns does center around the substitution of the word enhanced for developed, and we share the concerns, once again, that have been expressed by other folks testifying on these bills today. Our concerns with Section 2 of this resolution really goes to the heart of some of the changes that other folks have recommended, changing A to V. In actuality, probably not necessary since there aren't really any other preferred uses outlined. So I think it's reasonably safe to say that human consumption, whether there's an A or a B before it, would be the preferred use. I don't think any of our members, Alaskan members and Alaska Conservation Voters, have any wish to limit the ability of other Alaskans, including ourselves, to harvest wildlife. We do, however, as been pointed out by Nancy from Homer, realize that as our society is changing, that other uses are becoming apparent. The challenge has always been in Alaska to how to resolve conflicts between the users and how to make the fairest decisions for all users. We have a concern, and I'm not an attorney, but I think the concern is there, that by saying that human consumption is the preferred use, that in some instances this may be at the exclusion, the total exclusion of other uses, and then all of a sudden we're running smack dab up against the common use clause of the Constitution. I would certainly leave that argument to attorneys and others far more knowledgeable with the history of the Constitution, but I think we're getting close to that point where the line could be drawn that other uses are being excluded, other beneficial uses. Again, just as a matter of a way of addressing this very divisive issue of wildlife management, our members do not feel that this resolution and the potential amendment that may come out of it is going to help in any way to solve some of the problems around these discussions. And we're certainly willing to work with others to see how best we can resolve this in a fair way, but I don't think this resolution is going to achieve that resolution.
Is there any questions for Sue? Comments?
Thank you
for your testimony. We do have one more person on teleconference to testify regarding this. And that's in Matt Sue, Mr. Rod Arno. Did you want to testify on HJR 53?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity again. I want to thank you and the co-chair and the rest of the committee. And testifying again for myself personally, I'm in support of the HJR 53. And, I've heard good testimony on this, and as the president of the Outdoor Council for the last 8 years and as a member of the board of directors for the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, I've spent a lot of time as a hunting activist listening to the arguments of the anti-hunting community. And I feel that at the time that the framers of the state constitution were writing the constitution, that gave us the sustained yield section of the natural resource section, that they were no way were they even aware that there would be the anti-hunting advocates that we see today. And clearly, as we see that the human liberation efforts in the early 60s, that was transferred to the animal liberation groups. You know, they ignored a basic essence of the existence of life, and that is that life takes life. And I think that it is appropriate today that we do have a limited resource and that we have a limited number of people who choose to harvest, that being less than 20, between 15 and 20% of the state population, at Section 2, that would go ahead and then add to the Constitution the preference for consumptive use would indeed be appropriate today. And if the framers were aware of what was to happen in our lifetime, that they would have saved us this trouble by making that appropriate at the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arner. Are there any questions for Mr. Arner? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. And at this time, we do not have any more people to testify on HJR 53, but I would... Vice Chair,
I'd like to offer an amendment.
HJR 53.
To HJR 53.
Okay.
On line 6, after shall be utilized and utilized, comma, developed, comma, and enhanced. And on line 11, after the taking of fish and wildlife for human consumption is a preferred use of wildlife.
On line 11, it'll be the taking of fish, comma, and wildlife.
Yes. If that's proper, a comma after fish, I don't know.
No. Madam Chair, I do have a question.
Senator Barnes.
Well, Representative Cowdery is recommending putting in developed and enhanced. If you will note where we have inserted the word enhanced, right after it, the word developed is being deleted from the statute. I wondered if there is a reason why he is putting developed before enhanced, when in fact all you'd have to do is remove the brackets from developed to delete developed in the statute.
If that's the, it's my intent for it to be this way, but I have no real problem with doing it the other way either. Yeah, I thought maybe developed should be before enhanced.
Developed should be before and after.
That was my thought.
Okay. I believe that would be better. Representative.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
we have any fine attorneys back there? Could we ask Mr. Somerville to plop it up there at the table?
Madam Chair?
No, Ron, come here. You're okay. I said, put you there.
Comment on the proposed amendment.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Ron Somerville. Resource consultant to the House and Senate majorities. I'm not an attorney.
We know that.
Okay.
Have you seen this bill?
Yes.
So you know that where the word is utilized, comma, enhanced, the word developed is being bracketed to be removed. In your opinion, as a former commissioner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, ad nauseum, which do you think would be the better way to do it, leaving the word developed as it presently is in statutes, or inserted the word developed before enhanced?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnes, probably I'd recommend the way Representative Cowdery did, only because enhanced is used there to replace develop, and you need to restructure it anyway. You have to put an and in there or something, so the easiest way is to do what he just said.
I'll buy that.
Representative Jewell, question for Mr. Somerville.
Question. If we're going to include the word enhanced after developed, and we're managing, you know, it kind of changes a little bit of the management regime, would there then be a fiscal note other than just the cost of doing the election? That's one issue. The other is when we run a constitutional amendment to the voters, you know, it wouldn't take place till after the election and gosh knows how long after that to get to the issue of all of the material that's seen as backup in this. So is there another way to address the issue that's included in all of this by statute, which could be on passage of both houses and either signature of the governor or otherwise? Well, it may not be a signature of the governor, given the action. But once all the dust settled, wouldn't that be a quicker route, and is there a possible way to do it without having to change the Constitution?
Madam Chair, and Representative Jewell, I haven't really spent that much time looking at this issue. I really couldn't say. I mean, on the fiscal issue, you'd have to talk to some of your staff to determine whether or not that would require a fiscal note. I just don't know that either. You know, there's always a way, if I might comment, there's always a way of doing some of these things by statute. I assume the sponsor was looking for more concrete assurances that, in fact, that would be followed through.
I understand that.
Do you have another follow-up?
Not for Mr.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Senator?
Thanks, Your Honor.
Thank you. I would like to ask one more time to speak about the word developed and enhanced and long six.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Resources Committee. Actually, I discussed that with Director Reglin, and we thought that since the attorney for the board and in the next resources section of the AG's office was concerned about the term enhancement, as that relates to actual human uses down the road rather than just enhancing a game population or a fish stock. If we put develop in front of that, it would be clear that the term would still be there to guide the board and the state in regards to human uses of those resources also.
Representative Barnes.
Madam Chair, and could you please give me the name of the attorney that you consulted with?
The attorney's name that gave us the information on enhancement is Kevin Saxby.
That's what I was afraid you were going to say. Madam Chair, I'd like you to ask our legislative attorneys about this, please.
Do we have any of our legislative attorneys present?
You want me to go get Mr. Popley?
I'd like you to at least give him, if I might, Madam Chair, I'd like you to at least give him a call because I don't trust anything Kevin Saxby says.
Can you please track Kevin down? Ted, Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question to you. Are you, I know an amendment has been made. I don't want to be presumptive. However, is it fair to presume then that we are going to vote on the amendment?
As soon as we hear from our attorney, Ted Popley, on this one issue that represented
Ted.
Yes. And then we will be voting on the amendment.
If I might, Madam Chair, I certainly don't want to do anything other than that which we should do. And I'm concerned about casting a vote based upon an attorney's off-the-cuff opinion of verbiage that is going to go before the voters to be become part of the Constitution. I'm very concerned that we're not giving it the thought that we should, and I'll just leave it at that and let my conscience be my guide as we vote on this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Whitaker. We will be hearing from Ted.